attending the Church Divinity School of the Pacific in Berkeley, one of my professors, Linda Clater, who was a professor of homiletics, which is a dull word that means preaching, used to tell us there are two things that scared her the most. One was to have a gospel passage or any passage where she could not find anything to grasp a hold of. That was desert-like, and she knew not what to preach on. The other was to find a passage that had so many wonderful references that there was an overabundance and you could preach for hours. I paid close attention to that and decided not to do it. But I find that it's the latter situation with this passage from John's Gospel this morning. There's so much that one could preach about. There's John's retelling of the creation story of Genesis. There's his audacious new attempt to recreate the Christmas story and the heart of the doctrine of incarnation, God coming and dwelling among us. But for our time together this morning, I'd like to briefly look at two specific verses of the passage we heard this morning that really spoke out to me over the past few days. The first one is John 5. The light shone in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I love the note of confident hope that this verse sounds for us. On the one hand, it is a declaration of a state of fact. Light is stronger than darkness. Light will overcome the darkness that we face. And at the same time, it's a promise that when we feel we are in our darkest place, when we feel you cannot see your hand in front of you, where you know not how to escape the darkness that surrounds you, when you maybe least expect it, when it comes from a point that you never thought it would come from, or through a person you never imagined it would come through, the light pierces the darkness, and you see your way ahead. It may not be the easiest path, and it may not be how you would write the story, but still, light overcomes darkness. And I think that's really one of the crux of faith, is the certainty, even when we cannot grasp it, that light overcomes darkness, that we are not alone. And it seems, ironically, that in those times where it is the darkest, where we need God's presence the most, we have the most difficulty, or at least let me speak for myself, I have the most difficulty of realizing that God is present. And then it hits me that God has never left. The second verse that I want us to consider just briefly is John 18. It's towards the end of the passage. It's this one. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known. Now, what I appreciate about this verse is the reality. It's stark authority. Also, it's honesty. I mean, let's face it, no one has seen God, or at least I haven't encountered anyone yet. Anybody here seen God? I think it might have been a year or two ago I asked that question to somebody. But the fact of the matter is, for most of us at least, we have not seen God. And yet God's desire to be in communion, to be in community with God's beloved, is to me the overarching central theme of all the Bible. And so isn't it not just like God to become incarnate? The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. Living as we live, being born as we are born, eating as we eat, laughing as we laugh, dancing as we dance, crying as we cry, God desires to be among God's people. And so God comes to us in a form that we can wrap our arms around, that we can grasp. Jesus, God's Word made flesh. And what a gift that is, you know. I'm a big fan of science fiction, and one of my favorite science fiction movies that I saw several years ago, and maybe some of you have seen it as well, is called Contact. It starred Jodie Foster. As a scientist in the experiment trying to determine life on other planets and to pick up signals. And lo and behold, they do. And the signal that comes is this instruction for building a craft, a ship, if you will. And so through a series of mishaps as the movie unfolds, it turns out that Jodie Foster is chosen to ride in the craft. It will only set one person, and she happens to be agnostic. She doesn't believe in God, so maybe she's atheist. Optimistically, she's agnostic. Right? And the time comes, and they launch the craft, and there's a blinding series of lights, flashes. She blacks out, and the next thing you see is this scene on an incredibly idyllic island, a beach, in a tropical setting. And she is on the beach standing, and she's looking out at the distance, and a figure is walking along the beach as it arcs. And as it gets closer to her, she realizes this being coming towards her is none other than her father, who died several years ago. She is beyond herself. She can't believe it. And she says, how can this be? Dad, you died years ago. And the being says, it is not really your father that stands before you, but it is us. And we knew that if we came in the shape of which we originally are, you would not be able to comprehend or communicate with us. So we came to you in a form you're familiar with. And I think that's what God does. God comes to us in a form we are familiar with. Because I'm not sure I can look at least this side of the Jordan, on the magnificent aspect of the divine. So God comes to us. God comes to us, most for me, as you, as those I encounter on the journey of faith, the ones who surprise me. Yes, the ones who disappoint me, just as I surprise and disappoint those in which I journey with as well. I know it's hard to believe that it is. Nonetheless. And that's the wonder of it, you see. That's the gift that's been given to us in this season of Christmas. And it's good for us to realize it right here at the midway point, because, you know, Christmas kind of gets run over, right? First, it starts in August, right? And then it ends at midnight on the 26th of December. Which is not the case at all. It is a season. It's 12 days. But even then, excitement kind of gets shortchanged. I mean, think of it. We do a whole month for Lent, right? Easter gets 7 Sundays. Pentecost just takes over the rest of the year, the season after Pentecost. But Christmas, 12 days. Sandwiched between a turkey, right, and a little kid in diapers. So, you know, we just don't give it its due. So I need this remembrance of this gift that's been given to me, that's been given to us. God coming as us. Emmanuel, God with us. And it causes me to realize that Christmas is not a season, it's not just 12 days. It's a way of life. It's a realization that this gift of God being with us is not limited to any day or time or season of year. But it's a gift that we have been offered to open over and over and over again with each day, with each hour, with each minute, with every breath. The gift has been given to us again of God with us. So perhaps on this Sunday that only falls between the beginning and the ending of the season of Christmas, we treat this as the first Sunday of a new year. I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit. It's not Epiphany yet. Right? But we try to live into the reality of the gift that's been given to us. That's my hope. That's my wish for the year ahead. That I'm able to live into that reality just a little bit more. And that we realize that the light just might continue to overcome the darkness that seems at times to surround us and overcome us. That even in the darkest of places, the light of Christ will be present, even in the darkest places. And if that's the case, then maybe these words by the contemporary theologian Howard Thurman, in his poem called The Work of Christmas, just might sum up John's prologue. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky has gone, when the kings and the princes are home, and the shepherds are back with their flocks, then the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the peoples, to make music